In a radical act of defiance, Barbara Ehrenreich has abandoned cancer screenings, annual exams, and other medical rituals despite having health insurance. This isn't reckless negligence, but a reasoned rebellion against what she calls the $3 trillion health enterprise that promises control over our bodies while delivering something else entirely. As a scientist with a PhD in cellular immunology who later survived breast cancer, Ehrenreich discovered a profound paradox that shattered her understanding of biology. Immune cells, supposedly our protectors, actually help tumors grow and spread. This revelation forms the foundation of her provocative argument that our bodies aren't the orderly, controllable systems we imagine, but confederations of cells with their own agendas. What if the quest for perfect health is actually making us sicker? What if our obsession with controlling our bodies is preventing us from truly living? The compulsion to test and screen healthy people has become a public health problem medical professionals now call an epidemic. Physician John Mandrola warns, rather than being fearful of not detecting disease, both patients and doctors should fear healthcare. This perspective stems from evidence that many routine screenings cause more harm than good. Consider thyroid cancer. 70 to 80% of thyroid surgeries for women in America, France, and Italy are now considered unnecessary, leaving patients permanently dependent on hormone replacement. When the U.S. Preventative Services Task Force recommended against routine mammograms for women under 50 based on evidence, public outcry led Congress to mandate insurance coverage anyway. For older adults, risks increase further. A colonoscopy might detect a slow-growing cancer in an 80-year-old, leading to treatments that diminish quality of life without extending it meaningfully. We've been conditioned to believe more testing equals better care, a belief that persists despite growing physician skepticism about routine screenings for asymptomatic individuals. Have you ever wondered why medical appointments often leave you feeling vulnerable? Western medicine's procedures frequently humiliate rather than heal. Unlike traditional rituals that strengthen community bonds, medical rituals disempower patients through standardized procedures, mandatory disrobing, uncomfortable positioning, extended waiting, and unnecessary exposure. Anthropologist Robbie Davis Floyd documented how American hospital childbirth practices serve ritual purposes beyond medical necessity. Procedures like pubic shaving, enemas, and the lithotomy position make women feel powerless during what should be their moment of biological strength. Women reported feeling defeated and thrown into depression, describing births as traumatic due to these imposed procedures. Medical architecture reinforces this power dynamic, isolating patients while providers move freely through staff-only areas. Some physicians defend these rituals as cementing the doctor-patient relationship, suggesting patients expect such intimate interactions, uncomfortably implying patients want intrusive examinations even when unnecessary. What if the most healing aspect of medicine isn't the procedures, but the human connection that comes with them? We submit to medical procedures believing they're backed by rigorous science. Yet mathematician David Eddy discovered that medical decision-making often lacked formal rationale and solid evidence. Treatments were standing on jello rather than bedrock evidence. Most routine screenings fail the evidence test. Mammograms haven't significantly reduced breast cancer mortality. PSA testing hasn't decreased prostate cancer deaths, and colonoscopies show no advantage over cheaper alternatives. Annual physical examinations, costing $10 billion yearly, don't save lives or reduce illness risk. By 2014, the American College of Physicians declared standard gynecological exams worthless for asymptomatic women, while annual physicals had been considered basically worthless for decades. Medicine's relationship with science remains tenuous. Pre-med students must master organic chemistry despite its minimal clinical relevance. Cadaver dissection persists as a rite of passage, teaching physicians to violate social norms. This detachment may mask darker emotions. Anthropologist-turned-medical-student Melvin Connor noted, "The patient becomes the enemy, and effective practice may actually require a measure of dislike."
The white coat of scientific authority often conceals practices based more on tradition than evidence.
The harmonious body model fails to explain diseases like cancer and autoimmune disorders, where cells attack their own system. When immunologist Ali Mechnikov discovered macrophages making seemingly independent decisions, his contemporaries rejected this idea. A century later, cellular decision-making has gained scientific legitimacy. Modern techniques reveal remarkable cellular individuality. Natural killer cells show variable behavior. Only half participate in attacks, while some become serial killers. T cells move by repetitive lunges, with high probability of changing direction after pauses. Though vastly different in scale, both humans navigating sidewalks and cells continuously process information and make decisions. This agency extends surprisingly far down. German researchers found free will in fruit flies, whose unpredictable movements help evade predators. Even viruses make crucial decisions when infecting bacteria. Perhaps our bodies aren't machines to control, but democracies of cells with their own agendas. The pressure to maintain physical fitness intensifies with age. Self-help literature often demands seniors exercise 6 days a week for the rest of your life without excuses. This concept of successful aging, essentially not aging at all, emerged in the 1980s and now dominates Western culture. The burden falls solely on individuals, regardless of resources. Advice is contradictory yet demanding, with dietary recommendations varying widely. The only consistent rule seems to be deprivation. Anything enjoyable should probably be avoided. Medical science now views aging as a disease rather than a normal life stage. Aging involves the immune system responding to damaged cells, creating widespread inflammation. This chronic, smoldering oxidative and inflammatory stress explains why age-related disorders like atherosclerosis, Alzheimer's, and diabetes are all inflammatory diseases. Evolutionarily, this makes sense. Older, non-reproductive individuals offer no survival advantage. As Philip Roth observed, old age isn't a battle. Old age is a massacre. The immune cells that protect us in youth ultimately destroy us in old age. Research shows psilocybin suppresses the default mode network responsible for self-awareness in terminal cancer patients. As this function diminishes, mystical experiences emerge, featuring ego dissolution and unity with the universe. Our bodies aren't burdens to drag around, nor infinitely malleable clay. They pulse with cellular life, sometimes containing competing cells with no interest in the whole organism's survival. Our minds are colonized by others' thoughts through language and culture, with no immutable core. Thinking involves conflict between neural patterns, some synchronizing while others cancel out. Death into a dead world means leaving bones in a desert lit by a dying star, but dying into the actual living world feels more like embracing ongoing existence. As Bertolt Brecht wrote on his deathbed, "Already for some time, I had lost all fear of death, for nothing can be wrong with me if I myself am nothing. I manage to enjoy the song of every blackbird after me, too." True freedom comes not from controlling our bodies through endless optimizations, but from recognizing we are part of something larger, a world that continues singing after we're gone. The question becomes how to live fully within our bodies during our brief time, embracing both their limitations and capacities.